Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge. Real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We are getting a little better in New York with the weather. It's cold today, but at least we were able to walk through it. I want to say thank you to all of you that were out with us yesterday. As you know, it was a very eventful segment, and I will address that right after the shout-out. So to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7, Kiss FM Radio in New York, currently with isoradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on the radio on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing you again on Sundays. I said that was from 6 to 10 p.m. And then he's all over New York City as the CEO of Track One Entertainment Company, giving you the best of live R&B events and the best of venues. Now, those of you that have not heard this show before, let me say to you that if you are an aspiring singer and you've died to be on American Idol but it was too far, too expensive, whatever the case is, and you live in the New York area or any way that you can get to the New York area by February 11th, you have the chance to get your feet wet in the music industry with an American Idol-like local competition called the So You Think You Can Sing competition that will be held in the Brooklyn Nights at 497 DeKalb Avenue in Brooklyn at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, February 11th. It will be an honorary tribute to the late legendary Whitney Houston, and you can sign up for this event on line right now at track1entertainment.web.com. You can click on the So You Think You Can Sing flyer, and you can register in advance for $25 or on the day of the event in person for $30. If you want to bring anybody to support you, there's a $5 audience fee, and you can get your shot at getting heard, audition for some of the top-notch names in music. And along with Barry and the team, we will be there and see what you can do with this. Now, if you decide, and this is not mandatory, but if you decide, out of their 1,200 songs that they offer for you to audition, a Whitney Houston tune, you will receive an instant bonus points toward your final score. So even before the judges hear you and audition and judge you, you already have some bonus points toward whatever score you're going to get at the end of the competition. So with that being said, sign up, track1entertainment.web.com, and don't miss out on your chance to be part of this event. Okay. Next, we want to say thank you to the team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, Monster Miles, DJ Domek, Rodney Williams, and, of course, our favorite panelist slash activist out there in Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Betty Williams. Constantly, these four guys are constantly giving their best foot forward behind the scenes and on the air, and without you guys, I could not be where we at right now, and your help is priceless, and just being part of your team is invaluable. I want to thank a couple of our other panelists that have been joining us on a regular basis, Stalo Jenkins of D.C. and Professor Carlton Jones, Al Tariq in Georgia. I want to thank all three of you guys for being here and having my back all the time when it comes down to offering some insightful material to the discussions every night. Okay, to my social media groups, the new On the Edge Radio Show Listeners Lounge, Black Love and Conversations Group, the Real World Black News and Discussions Group, Black History Suppressed, and the Higher Research Institute. All of you guys have been phenomenal with the pre-broadcast discussions, with offering your opinions, the topics, and some things that need to be addressed, issues that are in your individual areas, and I appreciate all the support that you have given me up until this point. All right. Last night, speaking on the Richard Sherman situation, and we asked the question, based on comparisons to other athletes that were involved in high-profile scandals. If indeed the sports leagues and all these other athletics associations, okay, are actually fairly handing down discipline for the crimes that's been committed, or when it comes down to the minority or African-American athletes that commit the same type of charge, okay, are they committing them on a less severe angle but getting the severe penalties versus those that are not minority or African-American? Now, we made some comparisons, okay, and on appearances, and by the way, everything is, and based on evidence and things to that effect, it does have the appearance of racism being involved, even in the disciplinary actions that are being taken. So, with that being said, we had a group of people who thought it was funny to not come on, and whether or not you have a disagreeing viewpoint, just be mature about it, and I believe it's a bunch of kids that's doing it. But the point is, they spewed some, you know, horrible racial epithets on the air. They thought it was cute to constantly call back when they were getting hung up on, or, you know, they say something and they hang up, as cowards so often do. And they tried to disturb the flow of the show. Now, those of you who are listening to me know we have absolutely no problem with anybody disagreeing with my viewpoint or the other panelist's viewpoint. But disrespect is not allowed. Threatening, not allowed. Just being outright blatantly disrespectful toward other panelists is not allowed. And I kindly suggest that you guys understand that this is not a place for that. And the only thing I would ask of all of you to understand is, if you're calling here tonight with restricted numbers, or you're calling here with any type of Skype username, unfortunately, due to the idiots that showed up last night and tried to cause a rift, I will not be letting you in on the panel. So it's a matter of preserving respect among the panel and the integrity of the show, okay? So I appreciate all of you that have understood last night who was on, and I appreciate those of you who are really listening to the show because you feel it brings you something positive or informative or whatever the case is. But I do ask that you understand that for now, that is the way I'm going to be dealing with this. So if you're not calling me from a readily identifiable number, I will not be taking any calls from restricted numbers or Skype names. All right, so tonight, just to let you all know, we're going to go a little step further. And we are definitely speaking specifically on my African-Americans, because whether or not people care to admit, the hardest struggle on any race is the African-American community. History, the way that the budgets are being cut is geared toward minimizing the effectiveness of operations in this community. The reparations in throughout history have never been given back. All of these things are factual. These are not about personal viewpoints or racism, but racism exists, and people trying to close their eyes to it are missing out on things they can do, or missing out on the bigger picture of the way our world is going. And all of us need to understand that America was based on differences that were supposed to join together to be one big flowing operation. But apparently there are people out there who don't feel that certain people who don't look like them or act like them or are built like them deserve the same human rights. So tonight I'm going to bring up quite a few things. And I would like all of you, whether you have a specific aversion to certain communities, races of people, whatever, to just close your eyes and imagine that all the things I'm mentioning is happening to you, or to someone that you do prefer to find deemed worthy of being in the human race. And then see what would happen. How would you feel? How would you react? How is it that you would handle things if this happened to you in the world that you consider ideal? Tonight's episode is Roots, the Now Generation. Are we headed back into the chains? Now, I would like all of you to call in. I don't mind you having a viewpoint that doesn't match mine, not a problem. But I will not have anything threatening. I will not have anything disrespectful. I will not have people fighting across the board, because that's not what the show was created for, nor was it created to have anything other than the topics at hand and awareness be brought out there. So I ask all of you once again, we're not involved for the fraudulent aspect of anything, not involved with troublemaking, not involved with just spreading and spewing poison, to understand the restrictions with tonight's panel. So with that being said, we're going out with the word from our sponsors and our early break song. When we get back, we're going to get this party started. So today, I'm going to give Cher Lloyd and T.I. another spin on the turntables, and we will be back right after this in a word from our sponsors. Don't go away. Keep it locked right here.
Hi. Make a wish, girl. You deserve it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Baby, I can let you go with. Wish that I never did. Freaking perfect and 5'10". Just wanna punch your lip. Yeah, cause I know I've been wasting time trying to catch your eye. Yeah, I know that I've been so blind, thinking that I'm your type. And now I'm at home, I'm all alone, about to pick up the telephone. Got to call my genie so he knows. Yeah, I wish I was tall and I wish I was fast. Wish I could jump with a bag full of cash. Cause if I want you, I gotta have.
I'm talking solitaire, ice, got a ring, white necklace. And I'm talking reckless, girl, I'm certified respect, girl. You like to run your mouth when you're about to learn a lesson, girl. You the one, but I'll place you in a second, girl. And I ain't even trying to see you naked, girl. Wait, there I go, exaggerate. Clearly carried away, but what I'm saying, you can true that. I wanna be wherever you at. So you wishing you could kiss me, do you really wanna do that? Make a wish, girl.
Yeah, I wish I was
like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. KL Foote Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE, or klfoot.com. Kenneth Foote, The New Yorker, to contact in Florida.
The On The Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered. Featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On The Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. All right? I see we have a panelist already to come in. So let me get into the little summary description of today's show. We are speaking on the topic, Roots the Now Generation. Are we, as a black community, headed back into the chains? Now, we're not speaking on physical change, people, so I want to make sure that that's understood, because I got a lot of real shoot-from-the-hip reactions to the wording of the question. Proverbially, are we being stifled because of our own misunderstandings of what we're able to do and ask for and get, because of our own hindrances between each other, because of the things that we face on the outside? We have seen it all. We have seen the miscarriages of justice in the law. We have seen the, how can we put this, as we mentioned yesterday, we have seen less severity in certain charges being brought up against an African-American athlete, celebrity, victim, defendant, versus those that are Caucasian or of acceptable standards in society, that have done something on the worst level but had lesser charges happen. We spoke yesterday on different scenarios in the sports world. Let's talk about things that have come up in the legal world. Let's talk about our unarmed black men being shot for no reason. Just today, one comes up out there in West Virginia. Two African-American males went to a property they just purchased to look it over, to inspect, to survey the land as to what they were planning to do, and a white neighbor, old man, comes out, just fires, kills these two black men from his property, which was hundreds of feet away, if you want to say that, and then calls 911 to report that there was intruders. Okay, now, I don't know how it works in real law or what it's supposed to be, but usually you have to be under a imminent threat for you to feel that you have to defend your life. Seeing somebody that happens to be of a different color and sort of scares you because you don't understand the difference doesn't qualify. However, with the way some of these verdicts have gone, we all know the main one, with the way some things have been handled depending on which area of the world you live in, the way justice has been carried out, I don't care if you don't like a person or you're trying to find every excuse in the book for it to be justified. It's not. Let's look at the way celebrities of both sides are treated based on things that they do. Beyonce is under fire for her Grammy Award performance, and she's being called every derogatory name in the world by the media. However, Miley Cyrus, pretending to masturbate in the same type of clothing, doing worse type of whatever, is being excused as a troubled teen trying to find her way through creative expression. When a man in a plane turns around and backhands a 16-month-old child right in the arms of his mother because the child is crying in a plane, tells the mother to shut the nigger baby up, is facing the law, they immediately tried to give him excuses as to why he could have possibly or dared to come forth with that. He must have been mentally ill. He was going through grief because he just lost a son. He was also inebriated. Inebriation does not excuse behavior that's already there. Riley Cooper, yelled out a whole bunch of physical bodily threats to a group of people he didn't know because of race and named the race epithet. But he was fined and said that anything more than that would be too heavy a penalty for the action. Yet, Richard Sherman, who was reacting soberly to a normal beef between him and a fellow NFL player that had something happened previously, and then that person continued to try to taunt him on the field, plus he was under the excitement of a victory of a probably a hardest play he had to make that got him into the Super Bowl. And he's being threatened with death. He's been fined for taunting. In addition to that, as I said before, death threats. And what did he do that was so bad? He didn't violate any policies. He didn't do anything. Whatever the taunting on the field was, that was rightfully deserved because that is an NFL rule across the board. You don't badly celebrate a victory to the people that you just won the victory from. It's just not good sportsmanship, and I commend the NFL for having that penalty in play. So these are things that come up. A woman, an African-American woman, reported a rape to the cops, and instead of the cops taking her to the hospital, they arrested her and brought her to the precinct. Jonathan Farrell got into a car accident, a prominent football player. Got into a car accident in a white neighborhood, staggered in dementia, in a daze, through the woods, knocks on a woman's door. Like I said in my previous segment when we addressed that issue, I do not blame the woman for feeling afraid. At 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody banging on my door like they're crazy might be met with a skillet of hot oil. But what the cops did when they arrived was the problem. They saw this guy was a big guy. He was a black big guy. He was a football player. He was acting a little dazed because he didn't know what the hell was going on. He had a head injury more than likely. They didn't bother to stop and ask. But when it came to this man that just shot two unarmed, not harassing, not threatening African-Americans who happened to be in good standing enough in citizenship that they sat there and they bought property, the news media is saying, we have to get to the bottom of the investigation. What the hell is there to investigate? You can't say in one breath that this man opened fire and then called 911 totally uncalled for, but then turn around and say that we need to find out the circumstances of this event. The man pretty much told you. We're getting into calling in our two panelists for the evening, and I'm going to bring them in one at a time, so bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, KD. This is Al Tariq.
Hi, Al Tariq. I have a panelist behind you. Just one second. Let me bring them in.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Thalo Jenkins, a.k.a. Carlos Sullivan Jones, caller from D.C.
All right. Hey, how are you, Thalo? All right, Al Tariq, you got the mic first.
In a state of, as I say, some people, you know, I guess really want to believe it, you know, but it's really like a state of warfare going on, being carried out in a certain type of way, you know, and really like in kind of like a covert way. You know, people would differ with that, you know, but if you really look at it and you see how things are happening, it's not just happening like that in anybody else's community, you know, for the most part. So you're getting all these injustices happening, and then it's always some kind of way made up when some of ours are killed by someone, you know, someone else, particularly, you know, Caucasian, and they always make up some type of excuse. But when we do something like that, you know, it was cold-blooded, and, you know, they were just a murderer, and they savagely did something. It kind of reminds me of when the Indians took in the same people, basically, and as history showed, they took them in and treated them kind, and then after that, then they went to war with these people, made up reason to go to war, stole the land, and then called those same people savages and when they was fighting and they won certain battles, they'd call the Indians, they'd say it was a massacre. But when they won, it was a victory. And it's just always been a certain way that people has been viewed if you look at it from a historical perspective. Many people are too scared to. Truth is truth, no matter who does it. If you're wrong, you're wrong. You know, but these cases that you're talking about is just really sad because it's been going on for too long. And everything that's happened, now they're throwing in this knockout thing, that's a setup. You know, they even piece together places from places in other countries and bring it over here, and then they'll have people talking about stuff and have the media coaching them on to say different things about it. And, I mean, it seems like it's just a setup to destroy our youth, you know, in particular. And it's just so sad the way they got to go out here and get quotas from locking up black and Latinos. I've seen different specials with that, with certain cops, you know, they couldn't be seen, but they were telling it. You know, it's just real crazy out here. And I also watched some years ago on Tony Brown's Journal that was real key. And he said that the guy said that he had been infiltrating the Klan in, like, supremacist organizations for, like, 19 years. And what he said was they're not doing it the way they used to anymore. He said now that they're in your judges' seats, they're your politicians. He said that they restructured themselves in the way that they go about carrying out this supremacist type thing. So I see it as that's what's happening now. And this, I watched that when I was in my teens, and it's happening now. Yeah.
Okay. It is true. You know, it's like all of you know I'm the type that I don't like to put, you know, a conspiracy or a cause or just jump on the bandwagon because I happen to be, you know, qualified to be on the bandwagon. I'm not about that. But in this respect, like I said, those of you, and apparently, which I don't understand, I've been getting a lot of, you know, callers last night that if you don't like a situation, if you already managed to keep it out of your way, why are you bothering to follow a group of people that you don't like?
No, that's right.
You know, why do you feel the need to step into what you feel is garbage, to get all messed up in it if you already out of it? So if you're going to call to add to progress to something, you know, then do that. If you are in it because you really want to know what's going on, then do that. You have a viewpoint against what's going on, then do that. But for you to just view what we already know or we're already saying exists, you're just proving our point. You're just proving our point.
Yep.
You know, you're proving our point. Stay low, your thoughts, honey.
Hello?
Yeah, I need you to speak a little closely to your phone.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello? Yeah, I mean, as for what Al Tariq said, you know, I think it's true that a lot of people are afraid to address the historical precedent to our current condition. And I'm wondering why, I used to wonder why they said it, but I think I'm starting to understand now because we live in a mentally solved situation, or we live around mentally solved individuals, if you will, because whenever a situation happens that challenges what you think you already know, we have people that break down when they have this when they have these situations. So they try to avoid them. They don't want to deal with them. But we need to address the historical precedent. At the end of the day, regardless of what we think, I can't stand to think of allowing people to take the stand that, oh, I know this is happening. I've seen this happen. And take a complacent stance towards it. Because we have children. Now, whether you want to address it or confront it or not, whether you want to confront it is not really the question. The question is, do you live for anybody other than yourself? Because what you can shrug your shoulders to, a child, when he sees the same thing, will create his entire understanding of the whole world surrounding this image, you know. So we talk about the media, and we talk about our presence in our children's lives, and then we talk about our presence. Now, what qualifies you as being present is how effective are you? Or are you just shrugging your shoulders at everything that comes your way? Are you shrugging your shoulders at the history of your people? Are you one of those types of people that just want to go the easy way out? And if you have reasoning or rationale as to why, how could you?
Right. I got that. I have three panelists coming in. Hey, hang on just a sec. Let me bring them in. Welcome to the show, Cole. You on the air?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, am I speaking with?
This is Hakeem.
Hi, Hakeem. One second. I'm going to bring the other two in, and you have the mic. Hold on. Welcome to the show, Cole. You on the air?
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and hello to the panel. How are you guys doing? God bless you.
All right,
Welcome to the show, Cole. You on the air?
Hello, Katie. This is DC.
Hi, DC. Welcome to the show. Okay, I'm going to you first, Hakeem. Your spin.
Oh yes, I think this is a topic that we deal with every day, and I don't want to take up too much time, but I think that there's a, looking at it, like you said, historically, the historical precedence to me is that things kind of stopped after the Civil Rights Movement was ended with Martin Luther King's life and Malcolm X's life. And to me, you can't really get too far if you just skip over that. Because one, from a health standpoint, if you have a trauma, you have to address that trauma at some point. Or you just develop a callus in order to keep going. But that doesn't address the main situation. You know, and to me, at the root of all of the questions that I see on Facebook is a matter of your status within what you're calling the country. But I think it goes back even farther, where we have to deal with the education that we've received. A lot of it was cursory at best, and it never really gave you a full understanding of the systems that are in place that we like to call the matrix, you know, as a broad term. But what exactly is the matrix, I think, is a question that you have to address in order to begin to climb your way out of it. I just want everybody to know that there are people who have gotten out. There are people who are not weak, you know, that are not weak-willed, who face situations as they come. They're there, but they can't talk to people who are swimming in knee-deep, doing, you know, every day, dealing with a society that doesn't want them. So they regulate them to a particular area of that society. It's laws, and everybody says that it's the white man's laws, but that's a myth. There really is no white man. Now, there is, if you put it that way, if for yourself, but if you really look into it, that's a myth. If you break the whole thing down, it all crumbles. But if you don't look any further than the surface, yeah, you'll see all of the things that you're seeing. So I just want to say there are answers, but you have to ask the right questions. You have to ask yourself the right questions in order to start yourself in looking in the right direction for the answers that are correct.
Hakeem, and I'm going to go to you next, Deacon. You are absolutely right on that. And I wanted to address something that you said, but before I do, you're absolutely right, and I preach it all the time, if you want to call it that. There are ways to do things. The problem is, We spend so much time complaining about what has been and what we can't change. Why not view things from where we can? I like to use the rodent analogy that I use all the time. When mice get into your home, they don't come in barging through the front door taking down the big wigs. They chip away on the inside of your walls till they find an opening. For weeks sometimes. And when that one finally gets in and figures out that there's food, after they take what they want and run the hell back out to the hole that they made, they go get their friends and then it's on. We're so busy looking at trying to get the top dollar, the big cheese, the bling, the cake, the paper, the all nine, knowing that you're trying to get it from what you already have established is an impenetrable king cat. You know, the big cheese. Why are you trying to go there when there's nothing you could do that way? When there's ways that you could do stuff. Now, you addressed something about the educational systems, right? Well, here's my thing. Why are we trying to worry about trying to repair whatever education system we feel failed us already and not go with what we don't like with common sense now and work on how to address that? We don't need the schools to tell us that our communities have seven, wine and liquor stores on the corner of school zones owned by foreigners that are telling us we can't shop in their store if they're a 24-hour store except through a window. Why aren't we using that as one thing to talk about? Why are we sitting back and allowing people to cut fundamental programs that are needed for our disabled, that are needed for people who can't work and would like to work? Why are we not mandating that some of these big wig companies who's pulling everything they can from us use what they have from us and try to do for us? Why are we not trying to lean on the necks of those very black politicians that knew our names and our email addresses and our personal situations come September for primaries? And when November comes and they're in, and now it's December and January, why aren't we down there making sure that everything they personally promised to do, we're on their necks to make sure they're trying to make it happen? It doesn't take big-time education for you to have personal feelings about certain things and want to do something about it. It doesn't take much for you to have a personal experience that is your pet peeve for you to have the passion to want to make a change. We are so busy leaning back, hating each other, talking about weaves among each other, while every time we take a week to be on Facebook, the outsiders are in there going, look, there they go again. Listen, while they fight and go around the back, go get this, take this out, they don't even know we just voted against them. They took away the rights from the VRA Act of 1865. They took away the rights in Arizona for black children to know what their history was from history books.
Yep.
They're taking away food. They took away a portion of food stamps once. Now they're trying to go at it again. They took away public housing. They took away all the bad repairs that needed to be done. They repaired it, but they're taking the people who dealt with it for 30 years out so that the people they want in there can enjoy it for a profit. Why aren't any of us upset about that? And my question to the panel tonight, and then I'm moving on to you, Deacon, is this. Do you think that all these things are happening for attempted elimination or re-enslaving us? My personal thing is I don't think it's going to be elimination because, you know what, we're too resourceful of workers for them. So I doubt that they're going to try to eliminate us, but I damn sure believe they're going to do everything in their power to either scare us out of our rights to want to do something, make it so hard for us to exist in a world that either we'll go away on our own or we'll come back crawling and begging. Keep us uneducated if that's what they're doing, which I doubt it. I think that a lot of these things are choices people make. They're closing schools down by the drones. Schools.
Yep. Yeah, and they're hitting the inner cities more than any other place.
Inner cities, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're in New York City, if there's a snow day or a blizzard day or something to that effect, they will shut down or allow either delayed openings or complete shutdowns the night before on private schools or suburban schools. But they have to wait till 6:30 in the morning, only an hour and a half before public children need to report to school to make a decision as to whether or not these children are worthy of being safe from weather like that to go to school.
That's guilty.
And yet, neither parent who has to get the hell up with a bad hip or a bad back or a late work schedule or whatever to take these kids into school when they would have not sent them their kids into that mess are not complaining worth a damn. Nobody's complaining that the NYPD or all these other cops are just shooting to kill and think later. Nobody's talking about that postpartum mother who just had a baby a week into it that fired warning shots into the air right about the time Zimmerman was being, you know, fed through the acquittal side of things. And she got 20 years away from her brand new baby for shooting warning shots in the air against an abusive husband. Where is the outrage there? You think that Mark Zuckerberg needs anybody else to add on to his already popularity? Where was anybody that it mattered to out there making a stink where the hell it needed to be made? Where were any of you doing that? But we want to know why is it that everybody's doing. All we want to do is sit back, lay back, get screwed up the behind, and then turn around and say, why did they do that without any grief? Deacon, your thoughts on the matter, and then I want to go to our new panelist.
Okay. Basically, my thoughts on.
I need you to speak a little closer, too, sir.
Okay. Basically, my thoughts are that if we all start paying close attention on things that are being pumped into our communities, or basically just distractions to keep our attention away from the things that are more important that are happening to our people. And as long as we allow ourselves to be distracted and be pulled away from the most serious things that are happening to our people, especially our young people, there's going to be no other way but for things to get worse. And we have to come together as a people and be unified on one front in order to better ourselves and not depend on government. Let's not depend on any other race but ourselves. We are a powerful people, and we need to start realizing that. A lot of us don't realize that, and we need to start helping one another and stop worrying about if this brother or this sister is doing much more than what I'm doing, because it doesn't matter. Because if I'm doing any better than you, then it's up to me, because I look at it as a blessing. I'm being blessed so I can be a blessing to you. And if we start looking at things like that and start helping one another, we would be a lot better off than what we are today. And I'm not saying that we're not doing a lot better than we were years before, because we are. I think things have gotten better, but we're starting to lose sight on the true focus on, and that is for us to further ourselves to the next level. We can't get comfortable at one level and figure, well, I'm comfortable here. No, we can never be comfortable. We are not a people to get in one position and be satisfied. You know, it may sound greedy, but it's not greedy. It's just prospering. You should never settle at one level. You should always want to reach higher. And,
right.
And it is sad that so many of our people get to a level and they're comfortable, and they want to stay there, and they just don't want to pay attention to anybody else. They're on that self thing. It can't be about self anymore, people. It has to be about us, because there's no I in us. And if we work together as a strong people like we're supposed to, there's nothing anybody or anything can say or do to stop us from accomplishing the things that we need to accomplish for our people.
Thank you, sir. Okay, welcome to the show, DC. Everybody say hello.
Hello, DC.
Hi.
Hey, hello, hello, hello.
Good evening. Good evening. Well, Katie, you know my position as I posted a response to your blog on the same subject. I say probably three times a day, every day, that we are still dealing with the plantation mentality, and that's what is really at the crux of the problem of African Americans. When I say plantation mentality, I mean that there are a certain group of African Americans that have been allowed to make it, have been allowed entry to white schools, Ivy League schools. They've gotten education, and then they've been allowed to break the glass ceiling and make it into corporate America and make money. And then there are some African Americans that have been able to make it mid-level, and they're holding their ground and living in suburbia with the garage and the 2.5 kids, et cetera. And then there are other African Americans that have lived generations of poverty. They've been, you know, the recipients of the welfare system. They have, you know, continued this legacy of Section 8 housing, going from great-grandmama to grandmama to mama to me, et cetera. And it's all a ploy back during the slavery times to separate us based on what some are given, how some look, et cetera. And we can't break through that. What we tend to do is we hate people who are successful. For example, Katie, you said something regarding Beyonce. So many of our African-American sisters dislike Beyonce and find any reason that they can to hate on her because she's made it. She's made it, and she's doing her own thing and successfully doing her own thing. You know, crab in the barrel. I can't celebrate your success if I'm not successful, because then that makes you better than me. We can't come together as a race of people in America as long as we are looking at what my brother has, my sister has, and not willing to help each other all get, you know, better than what we already have. That's just my opinion.
It's a very good one, DC, and I believe that you and I kind of been mixing it up off the air, and, you know, it's been, with the exception of the gentleman on this panel tonight and two ladies that, you know, usually are here, two twin sisters, it's been one of the most intriguing pre-broadcast discussions that I've had that didn't turn to the left, okay? What you brought to the table was absolutely eye-opening, and it's something that I've been saying for a while, and so is everybody here. Obviously, we're all here for that reason, because we're not sitting back trying to take it. You know, there was something that someone had said to me before, because I was so, like, discouraged with some of the things that I was hearing and seeing, and somebody was saying to me that even if we were a self-sustaining society with all the things we speak about, there's still going to be some things where you can't save everybody, because everybody is still going to be stuck in whatever is safe to them. Well, you mentioned hating on Beyonce or hating on what your brother gets at that. Let's go a step further. We actually sit there and keep putting our eyes on what the outsiders have while we're complaining that we'll never be able to get that. And I say again, there's only so much that you could blame the struggle that our ancestors actually suffered through and still was able. This is what gets me when I hear this modern-day garbage, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not a person, and I, you and I, we haven't really mixed it up on the show, but my regular listeners here know that I have two things that I go by. One thing I say is that whatever negative that we are addressing, if the shoes don't fit you, don't put your feet in the shoes. That's what I feel. In other words, we're speaking about racism. If you are a white person that's not a racist, then obviously you shouldn't be offended by anything that we're speaking of that deals with racism and things that are done through racism. So that's number one. Number two, just because I'm a woman doesn't mean I'm going to agree with every woman cause that's out there. Just because I'm a black and Latina woman doesn't mean that every black and Latina cause or post that was made by a person, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. If it's right and progressive, I'm with it. if it's just as ignorant as what we claim to be fighting, I'm going to tell you about it and I'm going to keep it moving and bow out from the discussion. And it's my right to do so without any criticism or whatever the case is. We have the right to agree to disagree. Now, what you said, as we spoke of earlier, yes, the crabs in the bucket mentality, we've said that 1,000,006 times here. But if you are going to constantly try to sit back and not even make an attempt, okay, because it's always going to be that way. That's just the way it is. What can we do about it? Have you tried to think about what bugs you now? Because what's funny is our ancestors got their foot chopped off, their babies slammed from them, their wives raped in front of them, their husbands killed in front of them, and yet they found a way to still uplift their family, respect the union of marriage, respect their family, protect their family at all costs, no matter what it is that they were facing.
Mm-hmm.
These men would go home with split eyes to their wives and still love their wives. They didn't speak about, oh, well, your hair is in an afro. Oh, well, you know what, you're too fat. Oh, well, you know what, you just... They didn't do that. That's what the modern day us are doing now.
Yes.
Every child was their child, whether they birthed them or raised them or not. And when they got their 40 acres and the mule, they tried to multiply it by their own investment. They didn't sit there and complain that it wasn't the bling that the next person has. So those things are not the man with a lynch mob noose behind you. That's your choice.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody told you to call your sister or your wife or your girlfriend or whatever the case is a horsehair wearing bitch. Nobody told you to do that. That was you. You can blame conspiracy all you want, and I do understand that you only can go as far as what you taught. But then again, the law says that at a certain point in time, your parents are no longer responsible for your actions.
Yes.
You are now a person that can make your own comprehensive decisions. You were saying, DC,
It is a evidence of self-hatred for any African-American to say disparaging things against a African-American woman. She is the cradle in which our race has been carried. She birthed not just the African American male, but the African American female. And for either to come out of their mouth and to refer to a sister as a bitch or something to that respect, that's self-hatred. They have to hate themselves.
Right. And this is a country of hate. You know, this entire country. If you really look at it, the way we mentally even coordinate our lives, it's right in line with the white man. Many of us, anyway. But we need to get out of that because, the police, the law enforcement, they have a quota system. They want to lock up our youth. They want to take them away. We want to educate them. They want to take them away and subject them to the most brutal treatment they could ever imagine. But all the while, there's a whole bunch of us who could be saving our children, but we're stuck in, like someone said earlier, we're stuck in the civil rights era. We don't get past that. We're stuck in the MLK argument against Martin Luther King. We stuck in that right now. When we haven't even realized that's all an illusion too. The whole debate is an illusion. It's a media illusion. The fact that many of us are in college today. More of us are in college today than are in jails today. And this has been the case for years. We haven't known that. Most of us, I just found that out this year for the first time I've ever heard that. And I've heard the exact opposite my entire life. And that means something cognitively. And it does so for our children as well. I found that out. Our children don't even know that. The children I come in contact with do. And they've heard otherwise. They're like, no, that's not true. Oh, why do our children, they haven't even lived that much of a life on this earth. Why are they combating me when I tell them that more of us are in college than in jail?
Yeah.
You know, there are certain things, what I feel is this. I'm in a situation, for example, whatever that background noise is, I need it to end. Okay? there's a personal experience that I was witnessing, you know, in an area where there was a brand new employee that came in on this particular corporation, and in a month, this person received accolades that really is for the year, like they got, you know, employee of the year or whatever the case is. Now, in that realm of people was people that were there for 7 to 10 to 12 to 15 years that I guess never received anything. Now, my thing is this. Unless you found out that person was sleeping with the boss, was under the blanket of nepotism or favoritism or anything like that, you know, that's something to beef about. But if you know you've been in a damn job and you have not complied with what the requirements are, what the expectations are, what that little extra mile a boss might be impressed with, you know, you've done that, okay? Then you don't have the right to hate on somebody who came in believing that they wanted to do that, complied with it, and then got the accolades for it. Now, in this particular scenario, this corporation doesn't go by so much what the boss observes of you solely, but mainly what the customers that come in observe of you. And if that customer should happen to utilize the suggestion box or the comment box, and it always goes back to the head bosses. That's what they go by. So if this person came in and for some reason 4 to 5 people automatically said the best part of their experience was dealing with that worker, who are you to be in the job and get mad at that person? What the hell were you doing or not doing?
Ooh, you should get to the quiet, Katie. I am a IT consultant. All right. And I go into Fortune 500 companies and do the redesign, business engineering redesign. I pretty much have to isolate myself, especially from the African Americans that are there when I get there, because if they get any inkling of how much I might make or what my benefits are different from theirs, or how I'm living my life even, I become their enemy. And
right,
they do everything possible, hamstring me, to hurt me, to make me disappear. And I can't understand that because, again, you know, I don't want their job. Why? Because my thing is my thing. I'm doing my thing. You know, I'm not focusing on their thing, but I experience it more, and I shouldn't be shocked. I have experienced it more here in Texas than when I lived in Manhattan. I've lived in D.C. I've lived in Atlanta, you know, and then I come here to Dallas, Texas, and it's so bad here that I observe our sisters and brothers, when white people enter the room, duck their head. Chin go to the chest. Oh, and for a sister who was born on the East Coast, it takes everything in me to keep my mouth closed.
I get you. I get you. Now, I want to interrupt just for 1 minute, DC. Now, you're saying this as a member of the race, okay? I want all of those people who's listening to me on the stream, who's doing whatever, I want to speak to all races and colors, okay?
Yes.
First, let's speak to us. If you're saying that, and you're a member of the race that we're trying to get back to being re-empowered and not re-enslaved, okay? What do you think the outside is trying to divide and conquer are seeing?
They're sitting back laughing because they know that they're successful. They know that they're doing what
right.
they planned to do.
And that we're
yeah.
making it easy. That's number one. But now let's I want to bring up one more news story to add to this mix. The 16, I think he's 16 years old, that was a victim of the stop and frisk brutality. They just put him under arrest for assaulting an officer in that whole shakeup. This boy went to the hospital with mutilated genitals, Mm-hmm. Okay, had to get surgery at 16 damn years old. And they're charging him with assaulting an officer who was brutal to him during a stop and frisk incident, which should not have happened based on the story that was told by all three members that was involved with it.
Well, we have to look at it the way they are.
God.
They're, if you take the emotion out of the situation and think about it with a level head, their attorneys are telling them that they have to press charges so that it's a counterclaim and not just a one-way thing. They know they're going to have to pay money.
Right.
They know they're going to have to pay money because of the the heinous acts that they put that they perpetrated. So their lawyers are are telling them and guiding them on what to do, and that's something that we're missing. We get all emotional and attach ourselves to the emotional aspect of it instead of consulting with our elders or with our team of advisors to let you know exactly how to handle this kind of situation.
All right. Before I continue, because I want to address what you just said, I'm going to bring in the panelist that's been patiently waiting, and I always love to hear his historical spin on this. So just hang on one second. Welcome to the show, Professor.
Hey, how's it going, Katie, fellow panelists?
Yes,
hey, how are you? God bless you, man.
God bless you all.
All right, well, please welcome
it's amazing that you're talking about this story because that happened here in Philadelphia with the young man that was part of the stop and frisk. And the irony about that is it's not news here. You know, it's not something that's being brought up. And, you know, I heard earlier in the show where you guys were talking about why there isn't such outrage when certain things are going on within our community. And the reason is we don't own the media. So the media is who sensationalizes all the stories and takes things and they either create stories or they kill stories based on whose agenda they're serving.
Please let me address that because I know I'm going to forget with my old self. Let me say something with that, Professor. To me, to a point, it borders on using the excuses of the past. Let me say this to you. News people want news. Whether they try to kill it off and don't want to go to it right away, you let enough people stand on the damn corner raising hell for hours on end. You let traffic be stopped because there were so many people on a corner in a local neighborhood. Those people want to go and find out what's going on. And somehow, some way, that will be told. It's not going to work with us doing just letters, absolutely. They want controversy and we give it to them. They'll report it. Trust me when I tell you.
No, that places you, that gives you controversy, but it places you outside of the law. And then you can be dealt with that way. There are boxes already set up.
In a mob standpoint?
You know,
there are enough black networks out there on TV that can't be censored so much right away for it to
be
told.
We own 1% of the media.
There is always BET television. Okay,
who?
If somebody got hurt in that mix with it, NYPD had to get out there. Trust me, somebody would be there. And it's even if it does turn out that way, nobody tries. We don't try.
You don't see it.
Do you realize
who BET is run by?
Hello?
One second.
Make sure everybody can hear.
Go ahead,
go ahead.
We have a limited scope in terms of who we can connect with. I mean, we can connect with one another. That is true. But the overall power of the media, the overall power, you got to understand something. So much energy, so much money was put into creating the media strictly for purposes of propaganda that internet censorship has become a real issue now because of social media and alternative media. So and here's to give you an example. There was a situation in Texas where the citizens of Texas did not want to build the transatlantic highway that combines Mexico, United States, and Canada because they feared they would lose jobs locally. They protested. They won their protest. They went to the newspapers, the local newspapers, and they got their protests and they got people out there marching and protesting. You know what happened? The Spanish company that was sponsoring the building or the construction of that highway went and bought all of the local newspapers and stopped running the editorial pages in those newspapers so that those people couldn't communicate. Now you have the transatlantic highway already constructed, you know, creating the North American Union that's up and running through Texas. You see, so there is we can't keep underestimating. Katie, I know that you have a personal issue with people and their power to do things and handle situations. What I'm trying to tell you is there is a historical context to why the situations are the way they are and the situations in society. This is social engineering. This is not just people sitting around a table playing cards, talking about what they're having for lunch the next day. This is social engineering, planning, think tanks, billions and trillions of dollars going into controlling the current state of our society. Let me tell you how that impacts us. We have this notion here as Africans, and I'm not an African. I don't consider myself African-American. I consider myself an African in America who was born in America, and there's a reason for that distinction, and I'll get into that later. But there is something that we need to understand. As blacks, Africans, brought to this country, we were never brought here with the intention of being citizens. We were brought to this country in the eyes of these Europeanized Americans to be utilized for their benefit, for their profit, to enhance their wealth, to build their country. So that was our purpose in this country. It was never to be a citizen. So you had the Civil War. Now, everybody's going to be upset, but the Civil War was not fought to free slaves. The Civil War was fought because slavery was making the South rich, and the South was succeeding in creating their own country. And the North wasn't having it because they was losing out on their tax money. So at the conclusion of the Civil War, we had what was called Reconstruction, and then there was the black problem. How are we going to solve the black problem? And this is in historical texts all throughout history. You can check this out. There was a debate on what to do with blacks who were no longer slaves, but were creating their own wealth in other parts of the country. However, whites weren't benefiting off this wealth because they were building their own communities. All right? So that's when we come up with the creation of the Ku Klux Klan, which was a European creation. I'm talking about from Britain. They sent over agents to create the Ku Klux Klan to terrorize black communities and to bankrupt black communities and to steal and profit off of whatever black communities brought to the table and create a system where we as blacks here in America were the lower social economic class with no property, no land, and no wealth. Now, let's enter the next phase. The exploitation, we had the eugenics program. Now, the eugenics program was brought on to deal with population control in the black community. That's why you had Planned Parenthood with Prescott Bush and Margaret Sanger. You had the Planned Parenthood in operation. The whole reason we have condoms right now was to limit the black population growth. The black population has been 12% of the population since 1900. Okay? It has not grown. And the reason is because over 20 million blacks have been aborted since 1974. And when you take into consideration that there are only 40 million blacks in the country now, you see the devastating effects of Planned Parenthood in the black community. That was planned. Now, in addition to that, we have the welfare. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
In addition to that, we had the welfare system that made us lower socioeconomic independence of the state so that they could pimp us and put us in certain situations, breaking up the households and so forth. But we also had the prison industrial complex.
Yep.
That is the new form of slavery. Put into the amendments when the 13th Amendment clearly states that you
that slavery can be reinvoked if anyone is committed of a crime. It doesn't specify whether it even has to be a felony. So we have to look at all of those different aspects. And to answer your original question to start the show as to whether, you know, this country is trying to enslave us or eradicate us, there's both. It's trying to enslave us so that we become part of the new prison industrial complex, and you can check out what's going on all over the country. Private prisons are suing the states that they're in because they're not meeting their mandated quota. Crime is down all over the country, so they're not meeting their mandatory quota of beds in their prisons. So you have right now a situation where the prisons are underpopulated now. So this is what was happening is we're either going to be killed in the streets, and there's no prosecution for that. I mean, it's not just Trayvon Martin. You know, this is happening all over the place, and it's kind of like now we're becoming desensitized to it. You know, where blacks are just getting shot for being black, and there's no consequence, there's no jurisprudence to follow up, and basically we're just being killed in the street. Now it's funny because DC, I believe you brought up a point, and it's a point that I'm glad you were able to validate, is that the mentality of blacks in the North and the South are totally different. You know, but similar but different. See, people don't understand that, you know, as much as boisterous as we are as a community, as boisterous as we like to think we are, we still are afraid of white people.
Yep, for the most part.
And, you know, you can tell by the way we change our voice. And those of us that speak with confidence, a la Richard Sherman, are ridiculed, are brought there, and then there are mechanisms in place to so-called put him in his place or put
place,
us in
yep.
our place.
Mm-hmm.
So and we are, you know, it's kind of like what the brother said to start the show off, Al-Tariq said to start the show off. We are at war right now with a system that's so complex that many of us don't even understand. They're using us to kill each other. You know, just like the sister DC said, we are at a point with so much self-hatred that we, first of all, we hate who we are. So how am I going to love you if I hate who I am? So we'll never get to the point of working together until we start to understand that we are, you know, we start to understand our quality and who we are. And then we can start with the economics. We can't start working economically and building up our community if we can't even stay in the same room and work together.
That's right.
And once again, you're absolutely right, Paul, on that one. And I will say this, Professor. We have to stop looking at the many because we're not going to be able to get all of that. But in the meantime, does everybody sit around and say, this is the way it is? Well, they're going to come after us. You see what they're doing, right? This is what's going to go down. This is this. We're sitting here right now. Yesterday you were on the panel, so you knew what the situation was. They're even listening to my show.
Oh, good. Good point.
To the point where...
Yes.
I can,
yes.
They're doing everything they can. I brought that up to say, not for ratings or anything to that effect. I brought that up to say that if they're listening to this show, a little web radio show way off in the corner somewhere, enough to try to figure out what we're talking about, what our mindset is, what we're thinking about doing, whatever, why isn't it that a lot of us that are here, there's been people... You guys who are my regular panelists and are part of the groups, you know exactly who and what I'm talking about. Have been on this show, have had great viewpoints, say a lot of things on Facebook. Where have you seen them say that I've gone out there to do X, Y, and Z in my community today? They're aware. They know what's going on. If you can have a viewpoint to that point of knowing what everybody says as a collective thought process, if you know enough to think differently, you know enough to make a step to make a difference.
A lot of times people don't listen to them. And when that happens, they have to continue to do what they're doing, but they can't tell people who are not awake to what they're doing.
Yep. Exactly. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Because
if you go to the courts, you can look through. It's all public record. Everything anybody does in the courts are public record. And there are people who have laid down a track record for whoever understands that that is a way that you can see what they're doing. They've laid down that path for you. But if you're not looking in the right places, you're not going to see it. And it's disheartening. But you have to continue to realize that God is in control of this whole thing. And if you are a child of God, you have all of the blessings that you ever could ask for before you even ask for them. So that means you have to raise yourself to the frequency that those blessings are vibrating on.
Exactly. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Well, there's two questions that's on the table tonight about all that we are aware of. Are we in line for being eradicated or being re-enslaved? Now, Professor, you've said both. I personally believe that it's going to be more trying to tame us and put us back into submission because they're not going to shoot down or eradicate all of their good workhorses.
Well, yes, they will. They have replacements.
They have replacements.
Yeah, you're not been paying attention to the. See, here's what's going on. As we speak, the whole argument about immigration was to replace the black working class, the low economic social working class. Now we have a country full of Mexicans who are willing to exchange their life of poverty for a step up in America. Because at least in America, they don't have to deal with cartels. And they don't have to deal with civil war going on, which is what's happening in Mexico right now. So, you know, we have, our replacements are here. So that's why now, and that's what was so symbolic about the whole Trayvon Martin case that a lot of people didn't pick up. See, it wasn't Trayvon Martin on trial. It was all black youth on trial. That's why, it wasn't George Zimmerman on trial. It was all black youth. That's why you heard about Trayvon Martin's character. It was assassinated through the media. That's why you heard about Rachel Jantel, her character. It was assassinated through the media. So now it's okay. They dehumanized our children. So now it's okay in the eyes of the courts to kill our children. So now young black men and young black women are getting shot. And to make it clear, make it plain that they didn't discriminate, you know, they're killing black women too.
Yep.
You know?
Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, we have another panelist coming in, so just hang on 1 second. Welcome to the show, Cole. Are you on the air? Hello?
It didn't take long, did it?
Yeah. I'm having a hard time. They're trying to talk. I can hear it, but it's chopping up. Okay.
Hello?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Katie. This is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
You're sitting on tonight's subject.
I think it's both. And I think it's both because, I think there are too many black people, but I think it's more of a global thing than just an American thing. In America, for the most part, they have our psychology so battered and bruised that we can pretty much be used to facilitate whatever they want. I mean, when you think about the psychology of a black person, we talk about self-hate a lot, self-hate. But I think with a lot of black people, it's more of jealousy and loneliness. When you start talking about certain things than self-hate, they don't want to see you doing better than them, but the moment you're doing worse than them, they're the first people to give you a handout. They just don't want to be alone in their station. But when you talk about on a global level, when you look at what's going on in other black people in all over the world, when you look at Africa, as I mentioned in one of my posts where I said I've seen estimates of them saying we lose one black child every 3 to 5 seconds, you do the math on that. That's like over 100,000 black people dead every month. When you look at some of the other countries that have melanated peoples and some of the Asian countries and other places like that where there's just open warfare on dark-skinned people, and they go so far as they won't even allow dark-skinned people to be viewed in commercials. Mm-hmm. Advertising cities and other things going on, you know, you start to see, and you start to see what happens when, I mean, right now, melanated peoples are the majority of the people on the earth. And in order for white supremacy to maintain its position, you can't have that those amounts of people keep skyrocketing. And we all know why fertility is low. As I think was said earlier, they're dying faster than they're making babies. So population becomes an issue where eradication has to take place in order to maintain a level of balance where everything stays within control. But then you also need that enslavement aspect because you don't want to get your hands dirty. You don't want to be doing menial labor. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier, you have a disproportionate amount of black women working for the very government that is killing their children and enslaving their husbands. You know, you have to look at the ramifications of that. And then, as the professor just said, you know, you do have these Mexicans coming over, and their population has surpassed the population of the blacks in America. So, and they're ready to step in that role. But the reason I don't believe there'll be fully replacements for us is because of the psychology of the black person is so battered and bruised from 500 plus years of psychological torture that as a force of manual labor without any psychological kickback, there is no equal to the black worker in America right now. We will do whatever the white man says simply because he said to do it. And we'll question any free-thinking black that tells us otherwise. You won't get that type of response from any other group of people on the world. That makes us an invaluable labor resource for certain types of jobs. And they know this, and they talk about this. When I used to be a Lean Six Sigma consultant, and I used to travel and give consultants on efficiency and effectiveness for a lot of big-name companies, especially in Florida. And I would sit in these boardrooms with these people, and they would talk psychology a lot more than most people want to give them credit for. And they were analyzing their workers a lot deeper than people were giving them credit for. And if that's happening in the big in the corporations, you can almost bet that it's also happening in the thousands of think tanks that they have that are planning and going throughout all of these other things. So that's all that to say. I think it's both.
Well,
and he drops the mic and walks off the stage.
Professor, there's a listener who just posted in the show chat room that said he agrees with you on all points, but he would like for you to speak about how you're African in America.
Well, basically, and my point about being African in America is as a black man in America, as a black man, period, black people, we don't have one single solitary thing that we rally around or that we consider a root to our connectedness. You know, if you talk to anybody that's black, they'll tell you that they're Christian first. You'll talk to a black feminist, they'll tell them that they're a woman first, then black. You'll talk to a Muslim, they'll tell you that they're Muslim first, then black. Everybody in the black community puts something other than being black first, then being black. The one tie we have is that we all have roots from Africa. And being as though our roots were stolen from, being as though our ties to those roots were disconnected through the process of slavery, we are a group of people who are lost and at a loss when it comes to having any reason to have a centralized, dominating cause or force. We can't agree on God. We can't agree on what sex should be at the lead or whether it should be a joint issue. The one thing I think we can agree on is the fact that we're all a part of the Africa diaspora. So if that's what it takes to make us, to bring us together and to unite under one umbrella to work forward, then I'm willing to say that I am an African who was born in America. Now, that might not fit for everybody, and that's fine for me, but this is one of the things that it's one of the reason why I chose that is because I'm tired of all of the separation in our group, in our race. I'm tired of all the different people splintering off in different directions and not having anything to rally around or any galvanizing force. So that's part of what I'm saying. That's the reason why I say it. I also say it, too, is because it gives us a connection to the melanated people around the world. Because the brother was saying eloquently, this isn't just an American issue. This is a global issue. You know, we all have birthrights to that land back across the Atlantic Ocean. And, you know, we are the only people who have an actual right to it other than the Africans that live there now. So you have to get rid of us in some way, shape, or form in order to retake or restake those lands, those properties, and those minerals, those resources, and everything that's bountiful in that land. It's the richest land in the world. So, you know, and it's even documented through the Agenda 21 project that's been going on. Henry Kissinger had a project where he was talking about warring with people of third world and melanated peoples, where it talked about going into those countries and using food as a weapon and weaponizing weather and doing all these other things to eradicate those populations so that they can go in and claim all the resources and to destabilize those places of people who had color in their skin. So it's a global thing, and it gives us a connection to – so I say I'm African in America so that when I go other places, we have another common bond. But basically I use that term because it's the one commonality that all black people in this country can claim.
Right.
That's good.
Well, I will tell you one thing, and I was thinking about today, and it sort of disturbed me. And I wonder if any of our people realize that every time the U.S. declares a war, it's not long after the Census Bureau has completed its count.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of you picked up on that connection, but every single time there's an announcement, there's a war, it's after the Census Bureau has completed its count. And more than likely, you're going to find out that a lot more of us are on the list of people that exist than them, and that's a problem. And here's the thing. Ignorance is a killer. Ignorance is a killer. Being a racist is ridiculous because you are just as liable to get blown up by whatever chemical warfare one of those terrorists out there are going to slow down on you. You're not going to bleed any less. You're not going to come up purified. You're not going to be standing solid if a bomb should go off. So why on earth would you sit there and try to fight among your own? Because we are different. And the way I say to our people, you all need to be aware of this. You complain, everything that you complain about, all those days that you stood having a secret conversation on Facebook, talking about the very things that's happening against you. By the time you finally finish posting pissing contests, talking about whose wife got this, whose money bank account is that, how many celebrities you can't stand, how many celebrities you're going to stand in the concert line for, how many Jordans you just got for half off, how many girls are wearing weeds that are blonde that is, you know, a symbol of hatred for themselves, how many times that they wear weeds of the European nature, and it's a black self-hatred thing. By the time you finish doing all of that, they have taken away your housing, they're about to come and possess everything you hold sacred. And they're going to tell you to go find a corner to roll up in and should the seas take you. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, that's the power of that media. I'm sorry, Deacon. True. I think you was about to jump in there.
No, that wasn't Deacon. That was I just wanted to say this. And everything said tonight has been so good. It's just the point of, and it was something that sister said earlier. I can't remember her name, and forgive me for that. But yes, DC. And the thing, like, because I'm from up north originally, and this is so funny to me. A lot of people that's even from up north have migrated back down here. And the thing is, you know, I know
well,
we had this
culture,
the culture is different, but when I look at it, I'm like, what really is that? We may stand up a little bit for different things and stuff like that. We're on another level where we stand up. But at the same time, I'm looking at it like this. Why did a lot of us have to move? Why we couldn't create and do things for ourselves where we were even at? Because a lot of the Mexicans and other nationalities, they're in North, they're in New York, they're in other places in New Jersey, they're in Philly, they're coming in there, and in places where we should have our own businesses set up, they're taking that from us. They don't have to work for all these white folks all the time, because I see a lot of them with stores.
I believe in my own hometown,
they have just about taken over. All of that is Mexican and Puerto Rican now in Plainfield, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then if you go downtown, that's what you see. You see a whole lot of other nationalities, Lebanese, Arabic. You see all these different people. And I'm like, man, they pushing us out. Do what? Gentrification, as they say. So I'm like, well.
I believe that we operate under a modern-day version of a Stockholm syndrome. I really believe that. And I'm going to tell you what I mean. You have people, just like you just mentioned, Al Tariq, and we have spoken about this particular example quite a few segments running, okay? Mm-hmm. Chinese restaurants that come into your local South Side neighborhoods, okay? Rather than be upset that after being a 10-year, 16-year, 25-year customer, loyal to that establishment, if you should happen to be on the way and drop change or whatever the case is on the way and lost it in your short 10 cents, you couldn't get that order for a dime. Okay?
Right.
You couldn't go to one of the Middle Eastern bodegas on the corner and be able to shop indoors in the cold weather after servicing them on a daily basis. You're not allowed to shop in their stores. What I'm saying to you is this. If that was the case and we're not operating like we're trying to be loyal and bond with our oppressors or our abusers, why would we keep servicing that area?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's convenient to our local. I mean, listen, unless you have an emergency at home and it's dealing with your kid and you have no choice, pride goes out the window, I get it. But on the whole, why aren't you making a statement? Not by posting your chest or talking about how you're going to kick somebody's ass, but how about you go down the block? It might be a couple of extra steps or blocks to take, but you go and give the next man your money who will appreciate you more. Why are you giving celebrities who use your very struggle as their success stories to go give them more money by standing online with your light bill money to buy them apparel, their merchandise, their cologne?
That's right.
Why are you giving back to people that are going right to the very people who's telling you to your face, you are black so you can't shop here? I don't believe that your credit card was obtained through legal means. I think any black person who has a credit card that can afford to be here must have gotten it by stealing from someone. Why would you go support that person? Why don't you take a stand and hit it right where they feel it? They don't feel it through their hearts. They don't feel it through way of personal understanding or I've been there, done that. They feel it through the fact that they're not making any money. Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott. Bus boycott.
Yep.
Well, Katie, you brought up something that's really important about that, though. And that is we still have that integration mindset of our forefathers, you know, where we are trying to still integrate and show that we can hang or we belong with the white society. And, you know, we have to look at the fact that we still are suffering from the whole niggerization of our socialization. That is, we still don't look at each other or ourselves
as equals to our white counterparts. So that is a state of validation. I can prove to you that I'm worthy. Let me go to where you shop and buy clothes where you buy clothes. Or let me move into your neighborhoods. Let me take my children to your schools. And that is probably the biggest downfall of the whole civil rights movement was the integration part. Because the only thing that was integrated was our wealth. Our wealth was taken from us because black-owned stores, black-owned communities just weren't good enough for us to stay in and maintain. We had to go in the ballparks. We had to go be able to sit at the counter where they're probably spitting in our sandwich in the back while they're making it. But we had to have the right to sit there and eat that spit-soaked sandwich. You know, we are still carrying that to this day. That's why I say slavery worked, because slavery wasn't about, it was about making a profit off of it, but it was always about keeping us a permanent underclass, and it worked. I keep making the kind of the connection that our ancestors were truly not slaves. Slavery happened when they took the chains off and we chose to stay on the reservation.
Yep.
You know, because for those of us that did leave the reservation, there was a price to be paid. You know, to this day, Tulsa, Oklahoma is still the first place in the recorded history of the world where it was bombs dropped from the sky. You know, so it was messages upon messages about being black and successful in this country. And believe me when I tell you, those stories and traditions got passed down till today. So you have a young brother who is going to a store and buying a $300 coat. Excuse me, $3,000?
But you know what on that one? Listen, as much as I understand the overall whatever, in that particular example, I'm going to pin it down to whether this kid was black, Asian, striped, or white. When a child has been denied something because their parents think more on a logical or, you know, economical, more sensible way of being because we're parents, this kid worked in an industry that paid him more than any kid would get. He's an actor, okay? He finally saved up money, and it's his own money to go out and get that shiny new toy. And in his mind, that's what it is. I'm not putting that off on him with it being a crab in the bucket, anything. That is what any teenager would do. Because if that wasn't the truth, then I can guarantee you that those five boys that were calling here last night wasn't sitting up there telling their mom and dad that they want an iPad. Because I can guarantee you that's where they're calling from. This kid was having the excitement of any kid that finally got the money to go get that one thing their parents said they just couldn't afford right now. So I'm not going to put that off on anything being a black struggle. All right? But either way, who gave these people the right to make that kid feel like his money wasn't good enough? Let's take him off and let's talk about Wiz Khalifa. Wiz Khalifa walked in with a handful of cash, not a credit card, not a money order, not a cashier check, not an IOU, cash. Every place in Barney's that he went to, he paid cash, and they still maintained him, detained him.
But the question you asked was, why do we feel that we need to go to those stores to be validated? Isn't that what you asked?
No, I understand that, and Professor, you did answer that, you know, well, I'm saying that even in that respect, I would not put off on him going to that store under that blanket is what I'm saying. I'm not going to put that on him picking Barney's out per se because it was the end thing to do. I'm saying that's where he saw the one thing that he finally could afford that was a paraphernalia of somebody he admired. From a kid standpoint, what is he, like 18 now, maybe 19? That's what I'm trying to say, that he wasn't doing it because it was a blacks trying to be part of, you know, fitting in. He was doing it strictly from the excitement of a team that finally got the money to go get that expensive thing. That's what I believe. I don't see it being that kind of applies here.
But the Black Conquer will always apply, and that's basically the main tactic that Europeans have done to every culture outside of themselves. You know, divide and conquer has been the order of the day in their history. And they have done it to us. They've neutralized us the best because not only did they divide and conquer, you know, us through economics and stuff, they divided us through as far as culture and knowledge and wisdom and understanding. They took our identity, and as you see, people still have problems with understanding who they are. If a lions are predominantly come from Africa, right? If you bring them over here, you call them American lion.
Yeah.
You call them a lion, and they're still an African lion. If they get born here, you're going to say probably that they're born in America, but you know where lions come from, and that's their place of origin. So if we have a problem with our own identity, how can we even get ahead if we don't know who we are?
Gentlemen, with all due respect, I'm going to tell you what I'm seeing with the nowadays. I think we are no longer at the point of having the luxury to go back into our textbooks and reexamine our history. I think we got to use our common sense with the impending attacks that's happening now. I think we're going to have to start going with what is bothering us now. What do we do about it now? You know, if we can't come up with natural instincts, oh, no, I'm going to say the reverse. If we can't think logically through it, we're going to have to start coming up with how we need to react from instinct. How do we protect our family from this now? I don't think that anybody who hasn't done so by now, at 56 and 62 and 49, is going to understand how to go back into the textbooks now and understand our ancestors. I think after we've established something on the here and now, okay, that we can start going back and now cultivating whatever we have started with knowledge. Now, you, Professor, are involved with knowing all that there is. Al-Tariq, you read. Stalo, you read. Deacon, you definitely have lived a life. All of you remember, and in those of us that was raised in that village time, we also remember what it was like to have morals and values and understand the loyalty to family bonding and protecting your forefront. I don't think that this generation is at the point now where we can say, take the precious time that you already lost and got to where you are. We're going to try to get you back to the books. First of all, the books, as they know it, is being eradicated by governors in Arizona. I think that right now we need to make awareness of what they can relate to right now. People cutting their programs now. How does that affect you now? What do you want to do about it? What would you do about it? I don't think that there's time for them to go back into a classroom to understand what it is our ancestors did. I think now they have to use what it is that they're working with at this moment. And then whoever can fill in as we go can do that. Each and every one of us right now on here, whatever that is, please try to comment. Each and every one of us that's speaking on this panel tonight are speaking from a clear, objective understanding of what's going on, and each of us have unique connections and unique things that we can contribute to the big picture. The speaker said it best when he said that we dropped the ball, and somebody, I forgot who it was, that said that they believe that after the Civil Rights Movement, things just stopped. Was that you, Al-Tariq?
No, that wasn't me. Stalo? Yeah.
Stalo, was it you or Hakeem? All right, well, one of our panelists said it, and it was a damn good point to make, because I believe that we spoke earlier about the fact that it's been a while. But what I'm saying is, what we have to offer today, right now, this panel right here, DC joined in, awesome points. When the twin sisters are on the panel, they always have some great things to say. And they're you guys are all action people. We're all action people. We don't sit on Facebook all day till the next day, till the next week, talking about things that wind up being whatever. We actually are out there doing something. So right now it's kind of on people like us. Some of you know how to reach the big people of our people right now. You can reach some celebrities who are actually in the movement. You can reach some people who have a business. You can reach some people who's into the research. This is what we need to do. We can't save everybody. But if we can get a good amount to at least follow by curiosity, I don't think that right now we have the time to prepare for an attack and take them back to basics, because they've defied basics to this point.
Well, I wasn't sure if I should have hung up or not. This is Patrick still.
Okay, go ahead. Hi, Patrick.
I personally I agree with that, especially in the sense of I am young. I'm only 28. So I spend a lot of time talking with the youth, high schoolers, going around, talking to them, filling in the gaps. And when you start talking history, they do start to look at you like, okay, how does this apply to me? Like, what? I don't care. You know, like, and that's real. And as historians and history buffs and whatnot, we have to look at that and respect that and come at them from a different angle. My particular belief on this subject, and it's because since I was 19, I mean, my mom poured into me when I was growing up, black history, black culture. So I grew up black and proud. I had a little stint because I'm extremely dark, and my people got onto me pretty bad. So I had a brief moment in my childhood where I wasn't feeling being black. But for the most part, I've been black and proud my entire life. So since I've been 19, I've been going around talking to people, writing articles, writing books, doing what I can. And I'm starting to come to the under the impression that what it's going to take for black people to move forward is not going to be an awakening of the masses. I personally, and this is all of this is my personal belief, I don't personally believe that that's possible. And I don't personally believe it's going to happen. And I think praying for it to happen is a waste of a good prayer. What I do believe is that those of us that are the doers, that are into the history books, that are into psychology, I'm a big psychology buff, that are into those things like that, what we can do is understand the psychology of a black person, and we have insight into that that's better than any white person will ever have because we are black. And we can use that knowledge to set up a system around the quote-unquote less informed masses to where they are benefiting themselves without realizing that they're benefiting themselves. And the way I say that is I grew up in the hood, and in the hood, people wanted blacks and 211s. That's what they did. They didn't care where they went to get them. They went to the closest corner store to get a black and a 211. As people that do things and as people that are contributing to the cause, it is our responsibility not to tell that that black kid or that black parent to go seek out a black store. It is our responsibility to fill their neighborhood with black stores.
Yes.
And to be honest, they're not even looking into is your store black owned? Is your store black owned? No, they're not looking into that. They don't care. If you have what they're looking for and you don't give them too much fuss about it, they're going to come to your store and they're going to get it. So it's our job as the actors and the doers to build that community, because I think as the professor said before, we don't have a black community. It's our job to build that community around the masses that protects the masses from themselves. And this is essentially the exact same thing that's been done to keep us from getting into a better situation. We've allowed them to come in our community and destroy it and strip everything from us. So now, as those of us that are activists, that are trying to start businesses, that are doing all these things, it's our responsibility to go in there and build the businesses. It's our responsibility to go in there and build the schools. It's our responsibility to go to where our people live and build the community around them. And then once you control all the resources of that community, and in America that's pretty simple because we don't have to deal with natural resources. All we have to deal with is financial resources. So as soon as you control the finances of that community, you can begin to protect that community from outside influences, and you can begin to cultivate and develop that community instead of what we're currently having now, where we're trying to transform these communities and we're trying to further assimilate these communities. What we need to be trying to do is trying to integrate these communities in the whole sense of the word, meaning to become part of, to take the individual characteristics and maintain them as we apply them to the whole. We need to be trying to integrate these communities, and we need to be trying to develop
the special qualities and characteristics of these communities instead of trying to basically transform them into white communities with tans.
Yep. Absolutely. Patrick, I do have to jump in. There's 9 minutes left, and there's a panel that's trying to come in, but I want to touch on one thing that you said. Everything that you said is absolutely where we need to go, and understand, as I was pointing out before, but I think that just this generation, that still sounds like it's too big of a bite of the apple to chew off. So I'm saying, with that, how do we teach them how to use the little things that they find relevant that really do hold something? Let me give you an example. Deacon, you were on this segment with me, and it was quite a few months back, where
yes.
There was a lady that called in that spoke about what she contributes to our community as being a homeschooling mother that took on homeschooling for her community.
Right.
She opened up her home, and she is a homeschooler. She's a certified teacher, okay, and she uses her home as a classroom so that parents that don't want to put their kids into what they feel is a failing school system has the right to utilize their right and exercise their right that is federally approved to homeschool their children. So she does that. And she monitors their progress.
Yes.
And she has one-on-one neighborly conversations with these people. Why aren't we out there trying to get our this generation right now to stop thinking or making it sound like it's French to a German person? When you say, we got to build a business, we need to go out there, why not we show them how to take little things they do and make an entrepreneurship out of it? And then save a dollar out of $10 and save a nickel out of a dollar. I mean, how do we do that? Listen, this show is a show that's a strict forum for our people, has sponsorships that as low as $25, whether you are an individual or a person with a project or just a business. Okay? This is the type of thing that with that comes us going to the next level. Right now, this studio is open for Youth Day. Right now, the studio has a writer showcase. No one is telling these children, listen, go get that on your show. That way we could challenge them to write at their best and expose themselves in the craft that they enjoy. This is just me using me because I can say this directly and I know what we're doing. But there's so many other ventures out there. That's a channel. And instead of us trying to keep on talking the big stuff that seems like foreign stuff to them, let's show them how to use the resources of their own, for by lack of a better word, their own land, which is what they have. There are 7 minutes left. There's a panelist that's waiting, Deacon. I'm sorry. Let me bring them in. Welcome to the show, caller. 7 minutes left.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Hey, darling. How are you?
Hey,
I'm not really that well. I just wanted to. Hello.
Yes, we're here.
Oh, I just wanted to touch on something that you said, and it made much sense to me, and that was, it stuck out like a sore thumb, and that was that. I understand totally what you said about we have to meet them where they're at, because we are so critical when it comes to our history who have lived it. We become a little aggressive with it. We become very serious and maybe too serious for them. Right now, the kids are coming up with today, we have to make it attractive. Like if we, in other words, what I'm saying is that affirmations, cliches, a little bit about the history. If Jay-Z came out with a pair of boots that said Black Power, they would all wear it.
James Brown did it.
If Beyonce came out with what happened to the Afro, they'll wear it. You understand what I'm saying? So what I'm getting at is that it's an attraction, more or less. The only way to catch their attention is through attraction. Because that's where they all are right now.
Language.
Right.
I think that was a wonderful point to make, Darlene. I really do. I don't want to cut you down to our last couple of minutes.
Yeah, I know. I just want... just wanted to make that point. And I think that you made an awesome point. Deacon, you got a few minutes to make your last.
I just wanted to make a quick point. There was a comment made that wasted prayer. Let me make something clear. Whenever you pray, prayer is never wasted because you pray to God, and God could do all things but fail. So let's make that perfectly clear, okay?
I hear that.
Because whenever you pray, it's never wasted. God hears all prayers and He answers them. He may not seem like He answers them when you want, but it's in His time and in His will.
Yes,
and it
sir,
will be beneficial to what you need perfectly. I will say that. Okay, everybody, I am so honored. And DC, once again, welcome. Please join us again. I love everything that you guys have contributed, Patrick. Definitely, you know, everything since I've dealt with you, all the fresh ideas and the fresh input, and Professor and Stelo, Al-Tariq, Deacon, my pillars, I call you guys like my starting five in the panel. You guys have been awesome, and I still say that this panel right now are the aware ones. We are the ones that with whatever little we have or whatever large we have, we can make a difference. All's not lost, in my opinion. I don't think so. I think it's a matter of finding that one person that needs to hear what they need to hear to get it started. But until then, to the rest of you, those of you that are not racist and are trying to hide the fact that it exists, don't be uncomfortable with the fact that you may be part of the race that is. What you need to do is take what's different about you and make a positive difference as who you are. The rest of us, internal hating is the enemy's tool against us. You sitting here constantly speaking about what you can't handle and not looking at what you have right before you is a problem. The more that you spend time wasting on idle chats and cyclic conversations and things that go nowhere is as much more time as the plot against you thickens. So take a look at what you have. Do something about it for yourself. Start small. Stop looking at the big cheese because you're never going to get it. There's a big rat in place. Until then, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference. I will see you all here on Friday. Have a great day, everyone. Be blessed.
Right
everyone.
Back at you.
Good night, Katie.
All right. Love to all. Love to all.
Thank you.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues. We'll be right back.